up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Balatro is the game for this week's episode. Balatro is a deck-building roguelike. And just to compare two games we've talked about before, a lot of similarities with Dicey Dungeons and Inscription, as well as a game called Slay the Spire, which I've heard a lot about. I actually have not played that game. The game was originally released in February of 2024 on PC, Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4 and PS5, as well as Switch. And then in March of 2024, it finally came to Mac. The game was developed by Local Funk, which is, I believe, a one-person studio, and this person is from Canada, so shout out to Single Dev Team, really putting it together, making a big splash here. We've talked a lot about developers that were just one person. The game was published by Playstack, which is a London-based publishing company, as well as kind of a conglomerate. They have some development teams in Scandinavia. And some of the games that have either been published or developed under that umbrella, Mortal Shell, which is kind of like a 3D Souls-like game, as well as the Dick Wild series. I've never played those games, but I constantly see them on sale, so maybe you've seen them before. The game recently had an announcement of a physical release, so that'll be coming in 2024, and that is being published by Playstack. I don't know how that's being distributed, because this announcement is super fresh, but I would imagine it's going to come to major retailers. And so the editions that were announced were on Switch, Xbox Series X and S, and PS5. And I think it's just a standard edition with the box. There might be a booklet, but I know it's coming with 10 physical cards. So that could be jokers or planet cards or tarot cards. There were physical decks that were printed based on this game. And I think only a handful of them were printed and they were given out at GDC. I saw some tweets of some people getting them from Local Thunk or Playstack. I don't know who gave them out, but they are out in the wild. The game released with an MSRP of $14.99. And those physical editions that were just announced, I don't have a price on them yet, but I would imagine they are somewhere in between the 30 to 40 range, hopefully not more than 40. Runtime of the game, this is always tricky with a roguelike. I kind of could go by how long it might take you to beat one particular run, because after you beat a run, you can kind of unlock other types of runs. It might take you a couple hours. If you go through it in one go without dying or having to try again, it might take you under an hour, maybe a little over an hour potentially, if you kind of drop it and come back. But if it's your first time playing through, you're probably going to lose a bunch of times. So it might take you, I don't know, maybe 5 to 7 hours. That's at least how I'm gauging it, in order to beat one of the runs fully. But then it is endless. You could definitely play this game endlessly, especially with all the different things you can unlock. Me, I have been playing this on PlayStation 5, and I got it on sale for $11.99. I would say overall, I've probably put in over 25 hours in this game, but it probably took me a little around 10 hours to beat through two of the different types of runs. But definitely the first time I got into this, I did not beat the first run for quite a while. It took me a while to just get the kind of ebb and flow of it, but it has got its teeth in me. And in terms of recommendation, I initially heard about this on the Sacred Symbols podcast. They do a weekly episode, Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast. So that's Colin, Dustin, and Chris. And they talked a lot about this, really the aspect of it being poker hands. I'm a big poker player, specifically blackjack, but I have been playing poker since I was little. And so it kind of intrigued me. I'd heard a lot about it, hadn't seen anything about it. And then I just kind of saw it on sale and decided to dive in. Let's talk gameplay for Balatro. So we've talked deck building roguelikes before, so the gist is pretty much the same here. It is kind of a turn-based deck building roguelike. You're going to have instances where you're doing a run and you get kind of as far as you can. You can complete a run, which is nice, similar to Dicey Dungeons. And when you do, you will unlock access to cards or different types of things or different run types. A lot of the things you can unlock early on, you don't need to beat a run, but eventually you will want to beat a run to really unlock and pave the way for all different kinds of things here. But let's start with some of the basics here. So what you're going to be looking at is kind of a flat screen. Essentially, the majority of the gameplay is going to be you choosing different cards to either play or select or highlight. And so you can do that by either moving the D-pad or the left stick if you're on controller, and it'll kind of cycle through the cards. It's very intuitive. But recently I actually discovered on console, at least, that if you move the right stick, a cursor will come up. So sometimes if like the scoring is happening and you are going with the D-pad, it might kind of defer back to what is coming up or popping up to show you. So having that right stick as a cursor is an alternative on console. It certainly would be the case on PC or Mac. But a lot of what you're going to be doing is whether it's in round or post round. So let's talk about in round. When you're in a round, essentially what you're going to be doing is playing poker hands in order to get chips. You can play a poker hand up to 5 cards, obviously, or you can discard up to 5 cards. So you can select up to 5 cards and choose to play them and whatever hand they make and get points for that or chips. And then you can also discard if like you don't like the cards that you have in your current hand. So you're going to have a hand of 8 cards, typically, and you're drawing from a deck of 52. So your deck would be comprised of pretty much what you would expect in a 52-card deck, and you're going to be getting cards 8 at a time to make a 5 or up to 5-card poker hand. And anytime you play a hand or discard cards, your hand is just going to replenish right from your deck, and it'll do that automatically. And as you're looking at the screen in round, there's a good amount of information, but some of the important information is going to be how many hands you have left to play and how many discards you have left to play. And so at the start of your run, depending on the type of run, but we don't have to get into that, you're typically going to get allotted around 3 or 4 of each. I think maybe 4 hands and 3 discards is the first deck that you'll get. And what that means is you have 4 tries to play poker hands in order to rack up enough chips to beat the score that you need to beat in order to advance to the next round. And again, if you have a hand and you don't like some of the cards, or you maybe are looking for a full house and you have 2 pair, you can discard up to 5 other cards in your hand and that'll replenish, but that'll tick down one of your discards. And whenever you're in the round, there'll be a display that says the score that you need to get up to. And so anytime you do a hand, it'll add to your chip total. And once you surpass the total that you need to win that round, it'll kind of end the round and it'll collect all your things. And then you'll go to the next part, which is kind of an in-between of rounds. But let's talk progression in this game and the pace of how it goes. So essentially what you're doing is you're going through rounds, you're beating around by getting all of the score that you need to get to, and then you'll go on to the next round. And the way that the sort of overall scale of difficulty goes up is that there are three rounds within a level, and those levels are called antes, like ante up, like if you're playing poker. Each of these ante levels is going to have three rounds, and they'll be labeled as blinds. So you'll have the small blind, the big blind, and then the boss blind. And so the ebb and flow of this game is that you beat a round, you go to the next round, it could be the big blind and then the boss blind, and then once you beat the boss blind, you'll go to the next level, and then you'll have to beat three more rounds, but the ante is going to go up. So what that means is the score that you have to get in each of those rounds is going to get progressively higher and higher. So there's just a lot of repetition there. You're going to be pretty much doing the same thing, rinse and repeat. You're going to have to get a higher and higher score each round, but of course you're going to get better and better at the game, and you're going to improve your deck as well as a bunch of other things. The boss blind is interesting. So the big and small, it's just like a progressive score that you have to get, and then when you get to the boss blind of that level, that'll also be a higher chip count that you need to get, but there'll be a special rule at the boss blind. The good thing about it is you can see it coming. Like as you beat a round or go into a round, it'll show you all three rounds and what the chip totals are for them in that ante so that you can kind of plan ahead. But some of the special rules that you might see are that like a particular suit of cards is debuffed. That means when you play it, like it won't add up points, but it'll still count towards a hand that you're trying to get. Some cards will be face down. Like you might get your first opening hand to be all face down. You can't see what they are. You can play them blind, but you might not know what hand is going to go up. It could be other things like anytime you play a hand or discard cards, whatever comes back will only be a certain number, or some of them will come face down or something like that. So it can be all kinds of complications to be like, okay, this is the end of the level. It's going to be a little tricky. We're going to throw in a little kind of special rule here. So there are eight total levels in the game, meaning eight antes. So each ante or level has three rounds. So there's a total of 24 rounds. So if you're able to beat all 24 rounds, you would then win. And then you would unlock something, maybe another type of deck or another way to start or something like that. But you also have the option to keep going and play on endless mode. This is something I really like, especially if you're somebody that's like hunting for trophies and things like that, because once you beat that level or that deck or that run, it's really kind of you're playing with house money, so to speak. You can just kind of keep going because otherwise you would just quit and then start over anyway. So it's nice to kind of see how far you can go. And some of the chip totals that you have to beat, I was on ante 11 and they were going up to like 7 million. It was insane. So you can definitely see how crazy it will get. You're going to get rewards every time you beat a round, and primarily it's going to be money to buy things at the shop in between, and we'll talk about that in a second. Again, there'll be kind of full transparency beforehand because you'll see at each round what the small blind is going to give you in terms of number of dollar signs, what the middle round is going to give you, and then so when you beat them, you'll get that many dollars. There are other ways to get money. So if you beat a round and you still have hands to play, you'll earn a dollar for each extra hand that you didn't use, as well as you'll get interest if you start the round or if you end the round with at least $5. And so multiples of five, for every multiple of five that you currently have in your money pack, you'll get an extra dollar of interest at the end of the round. You can also skip rounds. This is something that I didn't do very often, but the game does explain it. Basically, if you come across a small or a big blind, you can skip it, but you'll get rewarded for it, which is interesting because you might think, well, if I skip a level, I feel like I should get penalized. Well, what you're going to find is that you want to keep playing levels, and we'll talk about upgrading your deck and upgrading your cards because you're getting exposed to more things, you're going to get more money from winning, and then you'll be able to buy more things and kind of advance your deck. So you will get rewarded if you skip rounds because you're sacrificing more experience and more opportunity to get things. And what you'll get rewarded with are these kind of tags. And these are special and they vary. They might do things like double your current money, or they might do something to maybe cards in your deck or allow certain things for the next round. So they do vary and it is interesting, but it's not something that I toyed with way too much. And so you're just going to be kind of doing this rinse repeat, progressing through, beating small, big, and then boss blinds, and then moving on to the next ante where the scores are higher. And so because of that, it's a very linear pace and difficulty pace as well in terms of how challenging it can get. So you will see that slight uptick in the amount of points that you need to get. But of course, that's also assuming that along the way, you're going to be upgrading your deck and your cards in various ways, which we'll get into. So let's talk about score counting, because like I said, you're going to be playing poker hands. And so you kind of want want to be aware of how they're going to be scored so that you can maximize your points and kind of get through these rounds a little easier. So you're going to be going based on poker hands. So the lowest poker hand is just high card, and then it'll go all the way up to straight flush. I don't think you actually get scored differently if you have a royal flush. So it's just straight flush would be the highest. And so when you play a hand like that, let's say you play a hand that's a pair, you can play just two cards and have it be a pair, or you can play two cards and three other cards. Essentially, they'll get discarded. So there's a little bit of light strategy just to kind of give you a basis here. It's going to assume whatever the highest hand is in your hand that you play of five cards, and then it'll calculate the score based on that. But it'll only count the cards that are in that poker hand. So if you have a pair, let's say you have a pair of aces, and then you have three other cards that you just want to put up and get rid of, it's only going to count the aces to go towards the score of that hand. Now, how the scoring works is you'll see two boxes that get populated, and there's going to be a blue box that's going to be the amount of chips, and then the red box is going to be the multiplier. And each poker hand has a base value for both of these. So, for example, something like a full house has a base value of 40 chips times a multiplier of 4. And then on top of that base chip and multiplier, what's going to happen is it's going to add the value of the cards to the chips. And the values that are assigned are much like from a blackjack hand. So face cards are 10, 10 is 10, and then all the other numbers or whatever the number is, and aces are 11. So if you have a full house of, let's say, aces over kings, so that means you have three aces and two kings, the base calculation of scoring for a full house is 40 for the chips times a multiplier of 4, but then you add in the three aces, so that's 33, plus two kings, that's 20, 53. So then 53 plus the 40 of the base is 93 times 4. So that's how it's going to calculate how many chips you get. And it'll do this automatically, and it'll do it very quickly. The math goes a lot quicker than I can do in my head. Certainly when you get to some of these crazy hands that you're going to have that have like multipliers in the hundreds and it's counting all kinds of chips, the math goes very quickly and you're just going to be like, oh yeah, sure, that's the math. And so the scoring is fairly simple. There are going to be ways to kind of up the chips or the multiplier, which we'll definitely get into. And it's going to revolve around ways to upgrade your cards or upgrade your hands or upgrade the different poker hands and what level they're at. So in between rounds, after you win, you'll get a reward of money, and then you'll be able to go to the shop. This is where you're going to do all your strategizing and adding and boosting and upgrading your deck. So the first thing that you'll probably see is that in the shop, there are a couple booster packs that might be available. And these are going to rotate depending on the round, depending on if you buy them. But the different types of booster packs that you can see, there might be ones that'll be like, okay, here's a pack of three cards, pick one of them to add to your things, pick one of five cards, or pick two of five. And the price for these might vary from $4 to $8. So depending on how much you get from the round before, you're really going to have to strategize and work the economy a little bit. But there are going to be booster packs for many different types of cards. So the first most obvious is going to be to add actual playing cards to your deck. So you'll be able to add more cards. Other things that you're going to see in booster packs, you're going to see celestial booster packs. And in these booster packs are planets. These planet cards are going to be what's used to level up the specific hand base values. So we talked about how a full house is a chip value of 40 and a multiplier of 4. Well, if you get the planet card that is for full house and you use it, it's going to permanently upgrade the base value for your full house hands anytime you play them. So if you use it and bring it up to, let's say, level 2, it might up your multiplier by 2 and up your base chip value by 20. So then your level 2 full house would be 60 times 6, and then the value of your cards added to the chips. So this is adding a very simple wrinkle in here where the base value for the hands that you play can go up, and this might cause you to maybe favor certain poker hands to be played. Another booster pack that you might get is one for tarot cards. So tarot cards are interesting because you're going to be using these to change the attributes or upgrade the cards in your deck in various ways. So some of the ways that you might upgrade or change some of them, you might have a tarot card that says change up to three selected cards to diamonds or change them to hearts or something like that. So you can keep these and use these in game. So for example, if you have two other high diamonds and you don't have any others, you might want to use this to then help you out to make a flush in that moment. Other types of tarot cards, it could be add a permanent plus 30 bonus chips to a particular card anytime it's played. It could be to add a plus 4 multiplier to any particular card anytime it's played. So you're adding these permanent bonuses to cards in your deck, and anytime they come up and you use them in a poker hand, those attributes will then get added to the chip total. So you definitely want to think about upgrading your cards as you're getting through, because anytime they come up, it's really going to boost the chips that you're getting for that hand. So there are three general ways that cards can get upgraded. They can get an enhancement, they can get a certain addition, or they can get a seal added to them. These three categories can all exist on one card. So you can upgrade one card in three different ways and have them all be kind of concurrent. But if you do an enhancement to a card and then you have it up later and you give it a different enhancement, it'll change it, so you'll lose that first enhancement. You'll have to be aware of the different upgrades that you can give cards and when one replaces another versus adds to it. So things like seals will add a different wrinkle to it, where they'll give a reward if that card is either discarded, used in a hand, or if it stays in your hand when a particular hand is played. And it can give all kinds of things. It'll add to the chips or the multiplier. It'll multiply the multiplier potentially. It could actually give you tarot or planet cards to kind of use later. All kinds of things can be going on here when you're upgrading cards and using them in level and getting rewards in level. There are also spectral cards, which will come a little later. They're kind of like a cross between tarot and planet cards. They provide broader changes, like they might change a whole hand of cards to a particular suit, or they might have you discard one random card from a full hand, and then you'll get added like four special cards or things like that. So they're kind of a bit more advanced. They come a little later. I don't know exactly what sparks you seeing them for the first time, but they definitely do bigger changes, not just like change one particular card or upgrade one or two cards. Something else that you'll see in the shop are vouchers. These are super cool. They're kind of like these permanent player buffs for the run. So they might do things like lower the price of items in the shop. They might permanently increase the number of hands you get to play each round or discards you get to play each round. They might up the RNG for particular cards appearing in the shop. So these can have pretty drastic effects, and they cost a little bit more, probably around $10. But adding an extra hand to each round is a big deal. So if you see that, you might want to jump on that. And then finally, what you will see in the shop are jokers. These are going to be the bread and butter of this game and really kind of shape how you strategize your run as you get exposed to and buy these. So jokers are kind of a really great variety of types of things that add to how you score your hands. So they're primarily scoring additives, but they can do all kinds of things. They can skirt rules. They can provide money opportunities within a round or anytime you play particular hands. Really, there is no limit for the types of jokers that you might come across. But let's talk about some basic categories that you might see, at least in your first few runs. So you might see some jokers that give you a straight bonus. Like, if you play this, then you get this. And what that might look like is you might get a joker that anytime that you play a flush, you automatically get plus 10 to the multiplier. So anytime that you normally have a flush, there's, you know, the baseline of chips and multiplier, and then you add in the chips of the cards with their value, but then you will get a plus 10 to the multiplier. So it's going to make a big difference, and it's going to gear you probably towards playing more flushes if you have that joker. You might see things like all face cards get a plus 5 to the multiplier, or all face cards give plus 30 to chips. Or anytime you play a diamond, it gives plus 3 to the multiplier. So you might have a joker that gives plus 10 to a flush, and then one that gives plus 3 to the multiplier for any diamond that you play, and you might have a flush of all diamonds. That's really going to up your multiplier because it's counting the cards, and it's adding the multiplier because it's a diamond and because it's a flush. All kinds of things coming together, and that doesn't even account for if your card has been upgraded to add bonus 30 chips or have its own plus 4 multiplier. You might also see jokers that will compound additives to every hand, whether it's adding to the chips or adding to the multiplier or multiplying the multiplier. And these could have various triggers. So it might be like every time you use a tarot card or use a planet card, it'll add 2 to the multiplier of this joker. And then anytime you play a hand, it'll add whatever the current compounded multiplier is on that joker to that hand. There are others that'll skirt the rules a little bit or alter how you play or alter what's possible. So you might get a joker that will say all straights and flushes only need 4 cards in order to play them as a hand, which is super interesting. You might get a joker that says all straights can skip 1 card in between. So you can have a straight that's like 4, 6, 7, 9, 10. Some of my personal favorites, I like when the jokers are evens odds. So you might get a joker that says all even numbered cards will add +4 multiplier or add 30 chips. So every time you have something that has an even number, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, it's going to add an extra. And again, that's in addition to whether the actual card has its own individual upgrade, as well as if the hand that you put up has another joker that gets activated. So all this kind of piles in. Another one is that cards that are 2, 3, 4, and 5 get triggered twice. There's a Fibonacci one where if you have ace, 2, 3, 5, or 8, anytime it counts one of those cards, it'll give +8 to the multiplier. So that's one of my favorites because I just saw it and it came out of nowhere. You can make all kinds of things happen there. There's one that I recently discovered. It's like a painted pair of pants. And it's accounting for all of the 2-pair hands that you put forward. Anytime you play a 2-pair, it'll add 2 to its multiplier. So like I said earlier, this is one of those that'll compound and it'll get added to every hand that you play. But if you keep playing 2 pairs, it's going to add to how much it does. So at one point I had my joker that had the painted pants for like +70 on the multiplier because I kept playing 2 pairs. Once you see something like that that stacks or is really synergistic with something else, you might kind of pigeonhole yourself into like, oh, I'm going to play a lot of 2 pairs or I'm going to play a lot of full houses. Something that you'll notice is that there are a lot of capacity things to help organize. So in the shop, you'll typically only see 2 booster packs available at a time, as well as 1 voucher and 2 cards that you can buy that are individual cards that are typically jokers. You can only hold up to 5 jokers. So you might see a lot of different jokers that are helpful for you, or you might really want to try, but you can only fit 5. Now, you can sell jokers off at any time, even mid-round. You can just scroll up to the joker that you want to get rid of and hit sell. But if you have something good going, or if you have ones that are adding in multipliers and being put in every hand, you might want to keep them. You'll definitely find that jokers that help you through the first few levels, like the first maybe 10 or 15 rounds, eventually you might want to sell them off because something bigger or better is coming across. You'll also only be able to hold 2 consumables. So those consumable cards would be planet cards or tarot cards. Planet cards, I don't really know why you would hold them. I think you should just use them because they'll just instantly upgrade whatever poker hand they reference. But tarot cards, you might want to hold on to be more situational. Like I said, if you want to change the suit of certain cards or if you want to add bonuses to particular cards, it might be situationally helpful to do that. So speaking of kind of strategies, like I said, buying and selling jokers as you progress, you can only hold up to 5. You may want to stick to or level up specific hands that are kind of fitting with your synergy, whether it's 2-pair or full house or flushes or something like that. But you might also want to diversify depending on your strategy or depending on what you want to keep kind of going. Because as you come across, again, boss blinds, you might have situations where like all diamonds are debuffed. And if your jokers are built on giving multipliers to diamonds and you have a flush multiplier, that really might hurt your strategy. So if you're disabled by a boss blind and you haven't leveled up your other poker hands or you don't have kind of alternative strategies, you might actually wind up getting hit and lost there. And in terms of accessibility, what's really great about this game is you can play your way. And it's going to be different each time you do a run. Like I said, maybe one run you're focusing on straights and flushes. Another run you're focusing on 2-pair, full house, 3-of-a-kind, things like that. It all depends on what jokers come up as you're getting into the shops in between rounds. And something might spark your interest and you might say, oh, let me try that this round or this run and see where it goes. What's also good is you can select, you can sell things, you can use upgrades, you can look at your jokers or your full deck even at any point.
You can even look at the future blinds coming up in the next rounds. Like, what's the boss blind going to be in this ante? You can look at all of that anytime. This is a turn-based game, but it's really just completely transparent. Like I said, you can move the cursor, you can move the D-pad, you can highlight anything. This definitely reminds me of games like Dicey Dungeons and Into the Breach that are just super transparent. You can look at all the information you need in order to make your move in that moment. When you're on the main menu for this game, you can look at the full collection of things that you've come across and unlocked, including jokers that you've discovered or bought, the different tarot cards that are out there, the different planet cards, the spectral cards, the different types of card upgrades that you've seen, so that if you want to prepare for a run just to see what might be possible or what might be synergistic, it's all available to you in the collection on the main menu. So that's really good. Again, full transparency. What's also really good is if you're in the middle of a run, you can quit and save at any time, at any point in the run, and you'll leave and it'll bring you right back to where you just were. It doesn't get any better than that, because if you have something going on in the house, or you know, you have to run out and you lost track of time, which you definitely are going to do while you're playing this, you can just quit, go to the main menu, it'll save everything, you'll jump right back in the next time you come. I really do like endless mode after you beat sort of the final boss in the eighth ante, because you can really see how high the points will get. You can do trophy runs. One of the trophies is to get, I think, 100 million in one hand, which is insane. The most I ever got was just a little over 1 million, but it's possible, apparently. So if you want to go for those trophies, unlock different things, unlock jokers, unlock cards, you can really get into this. It really has true replayability from that aspect. And so I really, really dig that. Let's talk about the vibe of Balatro. And let's start with the visuals. So this is pixelated. You will see a ton of pixels. The main screen, the cards, definitely pixelated. But it has a nice classy setup. And so what you might notice, whether you're in the shop or even in a round, you'll see the placement of things. Like there are things that are boxed off. Like the jokers have their own slots up at the top. It really reminds me of being kind of on a blackjack table or a poker table, or even just the setup for an online game site. It's kind of these individual green boxes, like here's where the jokers are, here's where your deck is, and there's like a card outline around it, again, much like on a blackjack table. Now, behind all the different boxes where things are found is like this psychedelic background that's just like twisting and turning, all kinds of movement and swirling and churning colors. It's not too distracting, but it really fits the vibe, because it's just like, you know, you're in this online portal where you just have your rules over here, your numbers over here, your deck over here, and your jokers over here. And then behind it is just like this churning of psychedelic colors. It really fits really well. I do love the card animations. They don't actually move, but just like what they look like, especially the jokers. It's really fitting to what the name of the joker is or what they're trying to convey. Whether they're like a badass or like, you know, really cheesy or something like that, like the makeup on the jokers. And it is pixelated, but it really just comes through, like the different colors, the hats that they might be wearing or whatever kind of silliness. It's really apropos of what the card is actually doing in the game. And the different attributes of cards are really easy to see, like the actual card, if it's gold, if it's steel, if it's glass, like you see that. Again, all you have to do is highlight your cursor over it and it'll tell you that this is a glass card. That means that it's going to do 2 times the multiplier and it has a 1 in 4 chance of actually breaking and being destroyed if you use it in a hand. But otherwise, what you're going to be seeing visually is just standard cards. 2 through ace, jacks, kings, queens are going to be the typical visuals that you might see. In terms of audio, the music in this game is great. It's just so inviting. It's so enticing. It's actually just one song throughout, and it's continuous. It keeps going. But anytime you vary what you're doing or where you are, whether you're in a shop, whether you're choosing cards from a pack, whether it's a celestial pack or a spectral pack or a tarot pack, it'll change. Like, maybe it's tune, maybe it'll add different beats in, or maybe it'll have like a somber side, but it'll be the same song. So it's similar to something like Super Mario Odyssey, where it's like, if you go underwater in a certain area, it's like the same song, but it's a slower tune. Primarily, the music is kind of this pixel tune. It's kind of a cross between Chroma Squad and like really good elevator music. I think that's probably the best way I could describe it. I never got tired of it. It's so inviting. It's so engaging. It's pretty rare that you have one song kind of playing throughout in a loop and it not get overdone. And then there are sound effects, especially when you're counting scores. It's automatically ticking things anytime a Joker is activated, anytime a card has its bonus activated, or there's all kind of bings and pops. It's very satisfying. And if you have a lot of them in one hand, it'll start to get like, okay. And it'll actually start to speed up because it doesn't want to keep taking up time. So it is interesting to hear all those sound effects. And then in terms of themes and feel, like I said, whether it's visual or even the audio, it really feels like you're in an online retro poker game. Like, you just have the feel like you're at a poker table or you're doing something involving, not to condone it, but gambling. Like, you're gambling with cards, you're putting up cards, you're gaming, basically. There's also kind of this nonchalant attitude, whether it's the Joker picks or just it feeling kind of matter-of-factly whenever, like I said, the scoring will speed up, or if you have a hand that is like so high in terms of points, it's going to go way over the requirement for the level. Like, the boxes where those numbers are, the chips and the multiplier will start to just get inflamed, and then it'll quickly calculate your score. And when you lose, it happens very quickly, and it'll have a losing screen come up, and it'll tell you your max bests or whatever. And then you'll have this Joker card come up and kind of be the narrator who's like talking smack a little bit, like, oh, you know, it sucks for you or something like that. He's always got something to say. And this reminds me of Dicey Dungeons, because anytime you come back to the main room, either Lady Luck or somebody else has something to say, like, oh, you didn't, luck wasn't on your side or something like that. But overall, just the whole package, the presentation, it's very tight, it's very cheeky, and it's very simple. Okay, let's wrap up the conversation about Balatro. So this is an epically addictive roguelike, and this is coming from me. These are not my genre of games, but it's definitely on a tier with Dicey Dungeons, another game that I really love that's like this. I might even put it above Dicey Dungeons because of just the inclusion of poker hands and, you know, taking a very simple card game or series of card games with poker and poker hands and just turning them into something so interesting. It really just, it blew me away. It has this cheeky charm to it. It has fun music. It's very simple on the surface, but underneath it truly has limitless depth, whether it's of strategy or intricacy. It just seems to keep going. There's always more to unlock. There are more combinations to do, different things that could work, all kinds of combos you can try, whether it's different jokers. And I don't know how you can get a million or 100 million in chip hands, but there are trophies for it, so you can definitely do it. I really think this is another triumph for a one-person dev team and their vision. I know we talked about games that maybe need more attention. This game is really popular. It's selling really well. I think it sold over 1 million copies, which, you know, shout out to this developer. Really nice job. But it's definitely a game that more people should be playing. More people should know about this. Games aren't just, you know, what we play on console or big shooters or anything like that. Like, this can really permeate into all kinds of people playing a game like this. I really see that. In terms of value, $15 for the MSRP is perfect for this game. $15 is perfect for this game. Probably could have got away with making it $20 for the MSRP, but I really think The fact that it's 15, it leaves no excuses not to buy and play this game. I don't care what kind of gamer you are, you should absolutely give this game a try, and even at full price. If you find it on sale, it's an absolute steal. I got this for 12 bucks, it's a steal. Even if you're mildly curious about this game, if you like poker just in general, whether playing online poker or poker in person, I've been playing it on the portal. In bed, it's great to play around, try to get pretty far on a run. There's no excuse not to pick up and play this game. So I highly, highly recommend that you play Balatro. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.